What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some help with real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they have mints. It has caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. If I'm driving around showing houses, making calls to my clients, before a workout, anytime I just feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll pop a piece of NeuroGum. Gets me where I need to be mentally. So get out there, try some NeuroGum.
Shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co., Gabe and his crew. They're making unbelievable products for beard care. So they got beard balms and butters and oils, anything you need for your beard grooming. They also make body wash that I use their beard stuff as well as their body wash, and it all smells so amazing. It's all made with natural ingredients. They started making candles. So if you're interested in any of this stuff, check out Captain Beard Co. and use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchases.
Also, before we get into the show, we just wanted to remind everybody that, you know, we are a newer podcast. If you've watched the show, any of our past shows, or, you know, if you feel like you've gotten anything out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you shared the show with a friend. And, if we could ask you to do a couple other things, if you could click that subscribe button for us, that would be awesome. We are trying to grow the show. Every subscriber matters at this point. So could click that subscribe button, click that like button, and if you really want to go the extra mile, write us a review on Spotify or YouTube. Now we can get into our show here. If you've been around for any length of time, you've noticed that, or we've known that Pat and I read a book together every month, and we don't physically sit down and read it together like we do story time or anything, but we read a book on our own, and then we do a podcast about that book once a month. So this is that episode. So this month our book was Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
That was great.
Yeah, man.
That was my second time reading it.
Me too.
I like rereading stuff like this because different things pop out at different points depending on where you're at in life. And yeah, this was a good one. I really enjoyed it. It just great negotiating tactics and ways to get the upper hand when it comes to negotiations.
Yeah. I mean, especially in the industry that we're in, I feel like it really, really helps. I mean, negotiation is a huge portion, especially, I guess more what I do than what you do.
Right.
But you can only, you can't exactly get into like a hostage type negotiation right. When you're trying to write offers on a house when there's multiple offers, for instance. There's not a ton of negotiation power or leverage, as Chris would say, on your side as far as being a home buyer in the market over the last couple years. But there's definitely some instances where these things have definitely come into play for me, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, on my side, it's not. Mine's more educating people on the loan options that are available to them and explaining the differences so they can understand what it is that they're getting into. So there's not a whole lot of negotiations there. It's like, hey, this is what this program does. This is what that program does. Which one do you prefer?
Yeah. So Chris Voss was how many years did he was in the FBI? Do you remember? I don't remember.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
He had a very lengthy career as an FBI hostage negotiator. FBI hostage negotiator. Spit it out, dude.
Man, how stressful would that be?
Yeah. And there's so many, and that's one part I really liked about this book is that he goes into specific stories about like times where there was hostage, bank robbers or someone overseas that got kidnapped on a vacation or just crazy. It was such a good book. This is my second time reading it as well. And I think I read this my first time doing 75 hard, if I remember right. It was 4 or 5 years ago at this point. So,
it's chapter one, the new rules, how to become the smartest person in any room. So Voss goes on to explain how effective negotiation is not by dominating the conversation, but by listening actively and understanding the other person's perspective. So he calls it tactical empathy, which involves showing the other person that you truly understand their feelings that they're trying to get across, which we talked about that on the last episode. You know, effective communication. I mean, really, to be an effective communicator, you also like you have to be the best listener. And it's not listening to respond, but listening to understand. And I think he does a really good job in this chapter diving into why that's so important, which if you can put yourself in their perspective and understand where they're coming from, it's going to give you the upper hand when it comes to negotiating. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think he did something or one of the exercises in his classes where he had one, you had to negotiate for the side that you didn't agree with.
Correct.
So, you know, I think you said this as an example on the last episode, but for example, if you're a Republican and, but he puts you on the Democratic side where you have to argue for the Democratic side. So now you have to figure out, all right, I got to see things from, you know, put myself in their shoes and so that I can kind of see where they're coming from. Yeah, it was a good one. I really, it's such a good book. Yeah. I really like chapter two. Chapter two, he talks about mirroring and
it's so simple. Too.
So simple.
So simple.
Yeah. And, but it works clearly.
Right. You're talking about your demands. So your demand is, it's like you said,
give
like,
me $20,000 or this, I'm shooting this lady in the head.
Okay. So you want $20,000 or you're shooting this lady in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're just mirroring that person. What I've written down is it introduces a key negotiating tactic. So, this encourages the other side to elaborate and build rapport, making them feel heard without pushing their own agenda.
Yeah. It highlights how mirroring can create trust and make the other person feel understood. It and kind of goes into like all the psychological impact of this technique. So it's a good one.
Mm-hmm. No, like they all just kind of lead into, but you know, don't feel their pain, label it. Tactical empathy and negotiation. So it just continues to build on this tactical empathy. So the power of labeling emotions is when you identify and verbalize the other person's emotions. So example, you use the terms like it sounds like you're feeling. So, you know, you go and give the example. Well, it sounds like you're wanting, combine the two. Sounds like you're wanting $20,000. What, you know, and then kind of go in and let them explain and let them go down. It fosters collaboration, allows you to collaborate and listen for underlying emotions that come from that. Which, again, emotions, I mean, that's the biggest thing is emotional intelligence. We talked about on the last episode how important that is and being able to control that. So you can use your IQ, the other side of it, your actual intelligence to, you get your EQ, your IQ. So chapter four, beware of yes and master no. So,
that's so good. Yeah. Just telling people no.
Right. Well, not just that, but like you can learn more from a no than a yes. Cause like how quickly do you just kind of like shut down when someone says yes? So like, I'll be talking, you know, you're in negotiation.
Or whatever. You kind of get that like I won feeling or whatever.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but you know, it's easier to say yes and then not follow up with it. So like someone knocks on your door. Hey, are you interested? Yeah, sure. Just give me your information. I'll call you back. Instead of like, no, because then if you get a no, then now it forces you to find that underlying.
Find more information.
Yeah. Get more information. No is dig deeper. Yeah, you're gonna get more out of a no than you are a yes.
Yeah, I can't remember which chapter it was, but I really like the searching for or trying to get the person to say that's right. Like that's I feel like is such a good.
That's
like,
the next chapter.
Oh,
chapter
next? I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
All right, but I mean, it all ties together.
So. Yeah, so good.
You get the no, and then once you start understanding the no, and they're more like. When they feel safe saying no, they're more likely to open up and negotiate more productively, which then leads into chapter five, the two words that immediately transform any negotiation. That's right.
Yeah.
The goal of a good negotiator is to get the other party to say that's right rather than you're right. So you get the no, and then you can
different things.
You get the no, and then you start going back and labeling, using that tactical empathy side of things and pulling to their emotions to get them to be like, yeah, that's right. And once you have that's right, you know, it indicates they feel understood.
Yeah. Once they say this, you've reached that breakthrough moment. They're acknowledging that you understand where they're coming from. Best way to trigger that's right is giving a summary, something that it identifies, rearticulates, and emotionally affirms their world. For example, how will we know we're on track? When your counterpart answers, summarize what they say until you get to that's right. And then now you know they've bought in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this next part, anchor your starting point when in negotiations. I think that's something that really does apply. It applies to our industry for sure. You know, I would say more in houses that have been on the market for a hot minute,
right?
The house that's been sitting for 2-3 weeks, it's been a little bit, you know,
shit,
not
really,
a ton of
in this market if it's been on there longer than 1 weekend.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, putting that, anchoring that starting point in, you know, well below what your goal price is. So say the house is listed at $400,000 and I ultimately want to pay $350,000. He would like anchor it coming in at 320 or something, you know, and then incrementally increasing your offers from there. I think he said like
percentages.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly. I want to say it was like 75%, 85%, 95%,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yep.
It's really good though. I like that.
Let's see. Chapter 7, create the illusion of control. This is where he's talking about calibrated questions, open-ended, thoughtful questions starting with what or how to make the other side feel like they're in control. These questions can guide them towards considering your perspective without directly telling them what to do.
I like that, starting questions with how and what instead of why. He's like, avoid why questions. Mm-hmm. I remember that part.
Yeah, I remember, like, after reading this the first time, like, think of it like this, is like, when you ask somebody why, they're automatically going to get, like, I know when I'm asked why, I kind of get a little defensive. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I have to justify what I just said.
Right. And
even with Calvin,
yeah,
I noticed that.
Yeah, it's
when
just,
I'm arguing
yeah,
with him.
Right. And it's something that I've all, like, this is one of those chapters that really stuck with me. And so, like, every time, like, now, since I've read it the first time, I've always, like, I'll catch myself texting or asking a question and why or and then I'm like, wait, how can I rephrase that to make it a how or a what? Like, why are you feeling this way? Well, how come it makes you feel that way? And allows them, you know, because why is going to make them more defensive, like more personal, and versus how, it's going to cause them to think.
Yeah, because why, you hear why, it's thinking about you, but how, when I hear how, I'm thinking more of situation or all the other extenuating circumstances that are out there. Less on like,
for example, like, you got a house that's been on the market. How did you come up with that value? Not why.
Why is the house listed at that price?
Yeah, exactly.
It automatically makes me think that you think I'm dumb,
right,
or something.
Yeah. Where it's like, how, what's the process that you use to come up with this value? And
then you're like, well, okay, what did I do?
Yeah.
Maybe I did fuck up.
Right.
You know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. It kind of gets you second guessing and allows you to, to answer that question, you can start telling, like, well, I did this, 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 and this. And that would allow me then to be like, well, okay, so how come you use this component of it? And, you know, that's not something that I normally see. Now, what made you, you know, decide to do that? And again, now it's getting you to open up even more, which might help me. Okay. Maybe that's something new that I need to look into or what, but it's just another way to get more information out of the person without making them defensive.
And that's kind of what it ultimately, the whole concept of this book is really just being able to pull information out from people. Just,
yeah. Getting as much information from somebody as you can.
And I think that's one thing that you and I get by doing this podcast too, especially
more
when we have guests than when it's just you and I.
Yeah.
I'm just constantly thinking about trying to keep that person talking, as far as like, okay, what's what elaborate on that, or keep going on that. Why do you say it this way, or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. You can just kind of keep them going on that same thing if you feel like there's more to say, if they've got more to say.
Right. Because you, I mean, you got what, how, when, where, and when. You know, you can essentially ask five different questions for the same, like for one of the, like for the same thing.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's a way. This has been great for helping us, and we talked about it on the last one, effectively communicating with people. But it also forces us again to listen, because if we're listening to respond, it's not really gonna do anything for us, because we want the other person to continue to communicate and talk about what it is that they're wanting to talk about. And if we're only listening to respond, it's not really.
I find the best questions I ask are ones that just pop into my head right when they're finished talking, or right when they say something. It's like, ooh, what do you mean by that? Or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But versus like, cause I always, no matter who it is, I feel like I always come up, or I do spend some time developing some questions before they even come in. But half the time I don't ever actually ever even answer.
Yeah. They're great.
They're there as like a safety net in case like there's like a lull in the conversation and I can just like rip that one out.
Right.
But I never ask those most of the time, because they just, there's not a point where it doesn't flow with the conversation well.
Right.
Like for example, like with our last guest, if while he was going over his presidential proclivities, I didn't want to like just all of a sudden bring it back to roofing, or bring it back to his, you know, hand strength exercises that he was doing, or whatever it is.
Well, but that was great that he had those, because then we could, you know, it was nice because we could just venture off of each one of those things, because there were so many different ways and tangents. So
he was so well prepared. He was awesome. Yeah. Jake,
thanks for coming on. Well done, sir. But yeah, no, I mean, he had those, but it like that was what was great, is it just formed a natural conversation that we could go off in every different tangent and ask those questions to get more out of them. So I really enjoyed having him on.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. Awesome. Chapter 8, Guarantee Execution. This chapter focuses on ensuring the other side sticks to the terms of the deal. So he explains the importance of using questions like, how am I supposed to do that? So again, not asking why am I supposed to do that? How am I supposed to do that? And to test the feasibility of the proposals and build accountability from the start. So again, it's asking the questions to get the people to talk, to give up as much information as they can, but also to get them to trust you during the process. And it's just a fine line. It takes a lot of a work and practice and effort. And obviously in our line of work, people aren't being, you know, taken or, you know, held at ransom. But I mean, even like with negotiating, like with kids, it's a way that, you know, we can use that to our advantage for when it comes to your 2 year old and my, well, obviously Theo doesn't need any negotiating yet. He controls it.
Yeah, he's easy.
But Connor and Oliver, I mean, Connor, kid, they're funny. But yeah, he's getting to that point where it's like, all right, I got to rephrase on what I want to get him to do or how I want him to do it. You know, so
I feel like we're having to do that with Calvin at 2.5.
Oh, it only gets worse.
I'm sure. That was what, chapter 8?
Yeah, chapter 9.
Chapter 9, Bargain Hard. So it just kind of goes into various bargaining tactics. I have the Ackerman model written down here. What do you know what that is? Do you have any
tactical approach to bargaining through incremental concessions?
Oh, I think that's what we're talking about.
We're talking about the percentages.
Anchoring and then coming up certain percentages.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good. I really like that stuff.
He was the student at school trying to get more money for the alumni event.
Yes, that's right.
So
and he needed like that specific number.
Well, he wrote the specific number higher than, he's like, I only need $400.
Right.
And so he started off with $1,000.
Right.
And worked his way back. And she's like, well, it sounds like you're looking for a specific number. And he just threw out a specific number that was
$33.55 or something like that. Yeah.
The dean came back and gave him $440.
Right. After quite a bit of back and forth.
Yeah.
Chapter 10, he introduces the concept of black swans, unknowns that can change the course of a negotiation. And like, sounds like these black swans are like just fucking key points that right. you're like waiting for them to say that.
Well, it's so the way, so a black swan dives into the history of the black swan is like, no one ever sees a, like, there's no, like, at the time, only one person had ever seen a black swan. So right. it's like things that don't ever occur. And I think the story that he tells is of a guy who murdered his parents and then ran down the street and held a bank hostage. And then basically his demand was, I want the police to kill me, or I'm going to shoot somebody at 2 p.m. And they're like, well, yeah, obviously he's not going to do that.
Right.
But sure as hell, 2 p.m. came around and they hadn't killed him yet.
Because his whole goal was suicide by cop. Right.
Right. And so he lines somebody up and killed the person. And then from there, he just put his body up against the glass and they just lit him up.
Right.
So
his whole goal for the whole thing was to commit suicide, essentially.
Right. Which, had they had done their prop, like, they didn't necessarily, like, they thought this was just a standard negotiating, you know, situation. But this was one of those black swan events where they needed to do a little bit more research and be a little bit more prepared for it. So basically what he's saying is, in any situation, be prepared for a black swan, something that could completely come out of nowhere that, you know, you may not think of or have thought, or like, could have been very rare, but just know that there is always that possibility and you need to be able to react to it.
Speaking of parents getting murdered, me and Gina just started that.
The
Menendez brother show on Netflix last night. We watched the first episode. Holy, have you seen it?
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff about it, which is funny. Why I'm not like, it's like, I was always curious. It's like, why is this coming back around now? But I remember it's like every few years, but they're like, Hulu's doing one on it with like the actual trial, like actual footage.
Really?
Yeah. But like, there's documentaries and stuff out there already about all this. Yeah.
I'd heard of it, but I didn't really know much about it. But yeah, we watched that first episode last night and I was like, whoa, holy fuck.
Oh yeah. Well, and there's so many twists and turns. I don't want to ruin
it. I'm excited. I'm fired up. We're one episode in and I'm like pumped to get home tonight after the gym and get the kids to bed and we can watch another episode. I'm like, it's so good.
It's good. Obviously, I mean, like I said, I've seen a bunch of stuff on this over the years. And
just the motive doesn't, I mean, I guess I'll get into it a little bit more, but it's just like crazy. It's just bananas.
It's different, but it's a good one. So,
All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap up today's show. Remember, if you guys got anything out of any of our episodes, make sure to send them to a friend. Send it to someone who you think would like it, or get along, or vibe with the stuff that we're talking about: manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, a little bit of real estate here and there. Yeah. Send it to someone. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like. Comment what you guys thought down below, and we will see you next time.